TUC Radio, San Francisco. Time of Useful Consciousness. The Cover-Up Commission. The government-appointed commission to investigate 911 is moving slowly, avoids the tough questions, such as the failure to intercept the hijacked planes, and accepts the restrictions the Bush administration places on the amount of material they are allowed to see and who on the commission may even take a look at the edited material. They appear to agree with many of the witnesses who demand that we need to build a bigger and better police state. The journalist Joyce Lynn calls them the Cover-Up Commission. She investigated the biographies of the commissioners and finds that these commissioners have ties to the very parties they are mandated to investigate. The CIA, the Bin Ladens, the Bush family, and almost to a man, the oil industry. Joyce Lynn begins her talk by tracing where the key persons on the Bush administration were on the morning of 9/11. We know where Bush was, but where were Rumsfeld or Condoleezza Rice? Here is Joyce Lynn.
On September 11th, while four planes were hijacked and two crashed into the Twin Towers, while people were burning and jumping out of buildings, G.W. Bush, Commander-in-Chief, was in a second-grade classroom in Sarasota, Florida, reading about a pet goat. He entered the classroom shortly before 9 a.m. By his own admission, he knew a plane had hit the Trade Center. He went on with the photo op anyway. At 9:06, 3 minutes after the second tower was hit, Chief of Staff Andrew Card walked into the classroom, whispered in Bush's ear that a second plane had hit the towers. "America is at war," he told Bush. Strangely, Bush sat in the classroom for at least another 5 to 8 minutes chatting with the children. According to one news account, his advisor, Karl Rove, held up a sign reading, "Don't react yet." Within a few minutes, CNN anchors had created the cover story, why Bush continued to chat about a pet goat while America was burning. He didn't want to scare the children by leaving the classroom. In the meantime, in Washington, it was a big day for meetings for other top Bush administration officials. The acting head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Richard Myers, had a breakfast meeting with Max Cleland in the Senator's Capitol Hill office. The National Command Center in the Pentagon reports to the Joint Chiefs of Staff, yet a congressional aide had to tell Myers to turn on the TV to learn what was happening after the first plane hit the tower, more than a half hour after the first plane was hijacked. Defense Secretary Rumsfeld was meeting with some members of Congress at the Pentagon promoting the Star Wars program. He told the 9/11 Commission last week, "Ironically, in the course of the conversation, I stressed how important it was for our country to be adequately prepared for the unexpected," ironically, to say the least. Apparently, like Bush in the classroom, the Secretary of Defense continued to sit in his private dining room at the Pentagon while hundreds burned in the World Trade Center. "Someone handed me a note that the plane had hit one of the World Trade Center towers," Rumsfeld testified on March 23rd. "Later, I was in my office with a CIA briefer when I was told a second plane had hit the other tower. Shortly thereafter, at 9:38 a.m., the Pentagon shook with an explosion of a then-unknown origin." Well, apparently Rumsfeld thought a half hour was short. Apparently, Rumsfeld's office in the heart of the nation's Defense Department is a communication vacuum without a cell phone, a television, a beeper. He had to go to his office window to learn that the Pentagon was attacked. It was after 10 a.m. upon his return from the crash site and before going to the Executive Support Center, he continued, that I had calls from my office. One, I believe, was from the president. That was after 10 a.m., nearly 2 hours after the hijack drama began. Well, National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice was meeting in the White House. Undeterred, she continued her meeting even after learning a plane had hit the first tower. After all, it was only a small plane. What do these stories tell us? That the executive branch was AWOL on 9/11. 9/11 was not a failure of low-level bureaucrats, but an executive-level stand-down. Now, that is certainly worthy of a high-level investigation. Yet more than a year after Bush and congressional leaders appointed a supposedly independent commission to investigate what happened on 9/11, the commission has failed to confront one high-level official in public testimony about their activities that day. Instead, we hear in the mainstream media what passes as stories about 9/11, a smokescreens about extending the completion date, who can and cannot see the presidential daily briefing, whose content we already know, and who could rattle the most targeted missile as a counterterrorism tool. Commission Chair Thomas Kean, a Republican, and Vice Chair Lee Hamilton, a Democrat, promised in a Washington Journal interview on C-SPAN last March that the commission would answer every question and leave no stone unturned. At a press conference 6 months later, Hamilton sang a different tune. When a reporter asked about a possible causal relationship between the CIA and Al-Qaeda, the anointed 9/11 terrorists, Hamilton incensed cut him off. "I don't accept the premise of your question," he huffed. Herein lies the problem. The 9/11 Commission is the cover-up commission. The foxes are guarding the chicken coop. The commission's framework is the official story, which is, as one military witness put it, on 9/11, the U.S. was attacked from within by foreign terrorists using planes as weapons. The commission is comprised of commissioners with ties to the very parties it is investigating, the CIA, the Bin Ladens, and Bush administration officials. From the day of the attacks, when the Bush administration let the media see the official story, many I've interviewed said they intuitively doubted that a guy with a long white beard living in a cave in Afghanistan masterminded 9/11 because religious fanatics hate our freedom and our Hollywood movies. From a woman with a young child on a cross-country train ride to two-thirds of a theater full of moviegoers on the anniversary of 9/11 in Oakland, overwhelming numbers of people doubt the official line. As a news reporter covering politics in Washington, D.C. in the 70s, I covered what politicians said, oblivious to what was really going on. 9/11 was my political consciousness raising, though. Out of this terrible event, I found that we each have an inside source that can help us report and cover and know the news and find the truth. That has guided my reporting since then and shaped the direction and content of the stories. When Lee Hamilton, vice chair of the commission, ranted and raved during one hearing last spring about a Washington Post headline calling for a new panel independent of the 9/11 commission, I felt a pain in my neck, letting me know the 9/11 commission was a story to cover. The true independent investigation would examine who carried out the attacks. That means examining all of those capable of carrying out the attacks, including elements of and in the U.S. government. To date, the administration has presented no evidence that it was Bin Laden and Al-Qaeda. Remember, they couldn't trust us with that information before they rushed in to destroy Afghanistan again. No tapes, nothing but an alleged hijacker's passport, which miraculously survived the rubble of the World Trade Center. Given the number of Freudian remarks at the hearings last week, advisors and officials saying CIA when they meant to say Al-Qaeda, for example, right. Maybe the truth is slipping out. The 9/11 Commission is officially called the National Commission on Terrorist Attacks upon the United States. The Bush administration had already written the plot line, and these 10 independent commissioners are merely reading the script. It looks like Karl Rove called Central Casting and found Washington insiders with so many conflicts of interest, so much to lose in their high-powered jobs, they are guaranteed to play their role and keep the truth under wraps. Instead, it is clear that the commission report will echo the who would have ever thought and the bungling federal intelligence agencies that other independent researchers, many of whom are at this conference, long ago dispelled. Take the air defense hearings last spring. They resembled a Saturday Night Live episode and would be laughable if the subject were not so tragic. Many responses and exchanges were ludicrous. They demonstrated the perpetual arrogance, disdain, and contempt the administration holds tragically for the 9/11 families and for all of us. For example, Commissioner Richard Benvenista asked the NORAD panel about a U.S. military scenario called Amalgam Virgo 02, designed to counter simultaneous hijackings, which NORAD had in the planning stages before 9/11. And here's a clip from that hearing.
Amalgam Virgo in general, O2, was an exercise created to focus on peacetime and contingency NORAD missions. One of the peacetime scenarios that is and has been a NORAD mission for years is support to other government departments. Within this mission falls hijackings. Creativity of the designer aside, prior to 9/11, hijack motivations were based on political objectives, i.e. asylum or release of captured prisoners or political figures. Threats of killing hostages or crashing were left to the scriptwriters to invoke creativity and broaden the required response for players.
Well, isn't that a bit fatuous given the specific information that I've given you? It wasn't in the minds of scriptwriters when the Algerians had actually hijacked the plane which they were attempting to fly into the Eiffel Tower and all of the other scenarios which I've mentioned to you.
However, then Benvenista, the most aggressive questioner often, caved and asked McKinley, "Don't you agree we could have been better prepared?" And of course, McKinley agreed. Going into agreement is a tactic the commissioners use instead of asking tough follow-up questions. Notice in this clip from the same hearing, which I call looking the wrong way.
Given the awareness of the terrorist use of planes as weapons, how was it that NORAD was still focusing outward and protecting the United States against attacks from the Soviet Union or elsewhere, and was not better prepared to defend against the hijacking scenarios of a commercial jet laden with fuel used as a weapon to target citizens of the United States? When you say our training, our mission was vestigial, I think you said it in an encapsulated form.
So, the Bush administration opposed forming the commission. It was only through the perseverance of a band of 9/11 widows that the commission exists. After stalling, Bush signed the law creating the commission in November 2002, and then stacked the commission, and then stalled again. The law establishing the commission requires that the members are prominent U.S. citizens, knowledgeable in intelligence gathering, law enforcement, and foreign affairs. Now, I have a diagram that will show this. There we go. Handmade. Okay, the commission members are on the left side. Tom Keene, former New Jersey Republican governor. Lee Hamilton, former member of Congress from Indiana, Democrat, is vice chair. Richard Benvenista, attorney. Fred Fielding, former White House counsel in the Nixon administration. Jamie Gorelick, a deputy attorney general in the Clinton administration. Slade Gordon, former Washington State senator. Bob Kerry, former Nebraska senator, currently president of the New School. He replaced Max Cleland, former senator from Georgia, who left for a job on the Import-Export Bank. John Lehman, Navy Secretary under Reagan, Tim Romer, former member of Congress from Indiana, James Thompson, former Illinois Republican governor, and on the commission staff, Phil Zelikow, who's the executive director. So it's appropriate that this presentation is scheduled following the previous two about oil. For oil is at the very heart, and in this diagram, the center, of the matter, even of the commission makeup. You can read the official bios on the commission website at 911commission.gov. One day after 9/11, Kissinger wrote in the Washington Post that he was not surprised at the coordinated attack the day before. In a comment that garnered little attention at the time, he said, "Any government that shelters groups capable," and I have the word capable in all caps in my notes, "of this kind of attack, whether or not they can be shown to have been involved in this attack, must pay an exorbitant price." A month after this astounding statement, the U.S. went into Afghanistan with no evidence other than the media and Bush administration telling us that Osama bin Laden was responsible for 9/11, and certainly no evidence that would hold up in a court of law. Then there's the Unocal pipeline through Afghanistan that the Taliban either would not or could not control, that was put on hold during the Clinton administration. And now, after 9/11 and the fall of the Taliban, is back in business. So that was Bush's first choice to head the commission. So Bush turned to Tom Keene, who was governor of New Jersey from 1982 to 1990, and since 1990, the president of Drew University. A far better choice, the mainstream media told us. Well, once again, oil seems to be the tie that binds. Fortune magazine reported on an interesting business partner of Keene's, Khalid Ben Mahfouz, also known as Osama bin Laden's brother-in-law. Yeah. The trillion-dollar lawsuit that some 9/11 families have filed lists Mahfouz as an alleged financier of al-Qaeda. It also happens that Mahfouz was at one time a business partner of the Bushes. Keene is director of Emerita Hess, a huge oil company. Hess is a partner with Saudi Arabia's Delta Oil in a joint venture in one of the stands. And according to journalist Chris Floyd, Mahfouz Asadi is one of Delta Oil's partners. Mahfouz also funded bin Laden family money through a partner in George W.'s early oil venture, Abrusto. Later, through a Swiss bank, a subsidiary of BCCI, which Mahfouz also owns, he saved GW's company from failure. And then BCCI, as you remember, the CIA used it to finance global black ops, and that was certainly in the heyday of the Reagan administration when George Herbert Walker Bush was vice president. And in the late 90s, U.S. authorities identified Mahfouz as a major financier of Osama bin Laden's extracurricular activities. Delta Oil has had a joint venture with Unocal for the Afghan pipeline through Afghanistan to the Caspian Basin. Well, unlike Kissinger and his direct oil contacts and implications, Keene is only a kissing cousin of Mahfouz, who has somehow managed to be a business partner of the Saudis, the Bushes, the bin Ladens, and one member of the 9/11 Commission. Keene is also in a circle of influential foreign policy institutions. He is a former chair of the Carnegie Corporation of New York, and he's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations since 1991, when the current National Security Advisor, Condoleezza Rice, was on the nominating committee. So she put Keene, granted his membership. Keene made headlines in December of 2003 when he said, according to what the commission had learned to date, that the 9/11 attacks were preventable. That created quite a stir. The fine print was, if only the lower-level people had done their jobs. Okay, now let's go over to the Democratic side. Senator Tom Daschle originally appointed George Mitchell as vice chair, but because of his business conflicts, he resigned. Daschle turned to another former member of Congress, Lee Hamilton. Now, Lee Hamilton is really perfect for this job. He might as well be called Mr. Cover-Up. He's worked on four high-level investigations and is zero for four for finding any high-level government malfeasance or criminality. Hamilton served for 34 years in Congress. He served on two task forces, which, despite mounds of evidence to the contrary, exonerated then-President Ronald Reagan and then-Vice-President George Herbert Walker Bush in two major scandals. The 1980 October surprise, when U.S. hostages were held until after the elections, which guaranteed the Reagan-Bush ticket defeating President Carter, and Iran-Contra. Iran-Contra, you will remember, the fall guys were Oliver North and John Poindexter, probably just like the CIA and FBI designees will take the fall for 9/11. Hamilton's committee failed to investigate the roles of Reagan or Bush in Iran-Contra, much like the commission is glossing over the roles of G.W. Bush and Dick Cheney in 9/11. Add to this Hamilton's role as a member of the Homeland Security Advisory Council. Homeland Security is now the big business in the United States. In fact, LegitGov newsletter recently reported that the Department of Homeland Security since 9/11 has made the richest oil companies even richer, granting them some $66 million to protect their refineries. Okay, let's go on to Fred Fielding. Now, if you read these bios on the website, you know, they're very mundane. He's a senior partner and head of Wiley Rain Fielding's government. Okay. And, of course, he also was counsel to the president and deputy counsel in the 70s to Richard Nixon. He also served as clearance counsel during the Bush-Cheney presidential transition team. A number of these people helped to put the people they're investigating in office. Of course, the commission bio omitted Fielding's recent notoriety. University of Illinois students in an investigative journalism class last spring proclaimed a multi-year investigation proved Fielding was Deep Throat, the source of information about illegal acts in the Nixon administration and Watergate that ultimately led Nixon to resign. If Fielding were Deep Throat and the insider who brought Nixon down, he put in motion events that led to two unelected men serving as president and vice president. That would be Gerald Ford and Nelson Rockefeller. Yep. Put a Rockefeller darn close to the highest office of the land. And in 1976, Ford named George Herbert Walker Bush as director of the CIA. Another commissioner, Ben Venisti, made his reputation on the Watergate Committee. John Lehman was appointed Secretary of the Navy by Reagan and served until 1987. Interestingly enough, he was a staff member and special counsel to Kissinger on the National Security Council during the Nixon administration. I'm going to, for time reasons, skip over the rest of the commissioners. You can look them up on the website. Suffice it to say, Jamie Gorelick has close ties to CIA Director George Tenet and tries to rehabilitate him or the CIA whenever questioning kind of gets too deep. One person we should look at is Phil Zelikoff, the executive director of the commission, its gatekeeper. He's an historian, and he worked with National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice in the Bush 1 administration, and after that they collaborated on a book, and he was on the transition team. The joke going around Washington is, did he interview himself about his own role in the failures that left us defenseless, for those who think it was a defense failure? Notice how many members have links to the CIA intelligence apparatus. We know that the CIA began funding Islamic terrorism in Afghanistan in 1979 and reached its heyday during the Reagan-Bush administration in the 80s. Okay, one other group I want to look at is the Council on Foreign Relations, another player on the foreign policy scene. Okay, to recap, Kissinger, Mitchell, Keane, I think Hamilton, Lehman, and Gorelick are all members of the Council on Foreign Relations. That's half of those named to the commission. Remember that Rice was on the nominating committee in 91. Since 1950, the Council on Foreign Relations has been David Rockefeller's child. The council bills itself as a research and educational institution, but in the truth of the matter is that it serves the interests of the elite, policies which benefit Rockefeller's global expansion of oil and financial interests. The two World Trade Centers sometimes were called David's and Nelson's. Today, the council has 2,000 to 3,000 members, but some of the key cream of the crop are Peter Peterson, who's been chairman since 1985, and Ellen Mariani has named him in her suit because of the influence that the council has on foreign affairs. Looking back, there's also Alan Dulles, George McBundy, Averill Harriman, George Herbert Walker Bush, Kissinger, Greenspan, Cheney. Okay, here's some photos from the Council on Foreign Relations 1991 annual report, near the end of the Bush 1 administration. Here's a picture of Cheney addressing a meeting in Paris in October 1990. Here's the President of Mexico and David Rockefeller. David Rockefeller's pretty much position throughout, Mitchell and Cheney, Rice and Warren Christopher's introducing her. Now, this is an interesting one. This is Ahmed Chalabi, founder and former chair of the, at that time, the Petra Bank, and in an interesting topic at the roundtable discussion at this meeting. The topic was for democracy in Iraq, the case for the Iraqi's opposition. Of course, today, Chalabi is leader of the Iraqi political organization and a member of the interim Iraqi government with close ties to the Bush administration and one of the people who supposedly supplied a lot of misinformation pre-Iraq. Henry Kissinger, here's a roster of the people. So clearly, anyone who wants to eat lunch in New York or Washington again will not do anything to rock the boat for this power group. Max Cleland said of the 9/11 Commission that its deal with the White House about seeing its presidential briefings is a sham, it's disgusting, and America is being cheated. Kristen Bressweister, is chair of the September 11th Advocates and a founding member of the 9/11 Commission's Family Steering Committee. She said of the commission, "If you were to tell me that 2 years after the murder of my husband that we wouldn't have one question answered, I wouldn't believe it." Kyle Hens, co-founder of Citizens Watch, which monitors the commission, has called the commission spineless and operating under a dark veil of secrecy and denial. I simply call it the cover-up commission. Like the Warren Commission, the 9/11 Commission is turning up some information that can help us piece together the real story, so it cannot be dismissed out of hand. But the real benefit I see of the commission is that it may be accumulating quite a record of those who may have misled or lied to the commission. It may be that the commissioner, James Thompson, former governor of Illinois, from his commission bio, is probably the most qualified to serve on the commission. In 1971, he became U.S. Attorney General for the Northern District, where, his bio says, he established a solid reputation for prosecuting corrupt public officials. Just the kind of person we need. Remember, cover-up is another name for obstruction of justice. Perhaps the international inquiry, which we're forming, might consider adding some of these commissioners to those involved in the cover-up. Thanks.
That was Joyce Lynn, former Beltway journalist and one of the People's Investigators of 911. Joyce Lynn is the editor of Political Diary, an online newsletter, and founder of the Pink Rose Society. You can find her on the web under www.joycelynn.com. Lynn is spelled L-Y-N-N. In TUC Radio's next program, you will hear from Greg Palast with an update on voter fraud and electronic voting. Will we be allowed to vote this year? And will our votes be counted? Greg Palast spoke at a benefit for Project Censored. I hope you can find a pen to take down a phone number. You can find more information on the Cover-Up Commission on TUC Radio's website, www.tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under Newest Programs. You can get information how to order a copy of the complete one-hour tape or CD about the Cover-Up Commission and the previous program on the role of Pakistan in 911 by calling us. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations. Your tape or CD order is the only support we receive. It makes it possible for us to stay on the air. Call us toll-free anytime at 877-TUC-TAPE for information on how to order. You can get your tape by mail or credit card, by phone, or on the web. Our toll-free phone number, 877-TUC-TAPE, translates into 877-882-8273. My name is Maria Gilardin. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.